Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Robin, myself, Matt. Hey. And today we're diving into the trenches and we have Jack Bentle from the Touchdown UK joining us. Jack, thank you ever so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting some draft prospects. It's getting to that time of year where it's all really hitting the busy time. So yeah, it should be fun.
And I think for you, it's this. I bet you're glad that it's only a week to go till the to the real thing.
Yeah. Like draft prep starts that like the summer before. So some of these kind of prospects you kind of watch a year out. So it's I'm already starting work on next year's class now because it's got to that time of year where, you know. But yeah, ready for it to come around. It's always a long wait, isn't it, between the Super Bowl and the draft?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a bit I like as well. I mean, Robin does get involved in it this year. He's actually been involved that much with the research stuff, but it's stuff that I like try and get into a lot more. And obviously the guests we've had on, it's always great to have different insights from outsiders looking in at the Bills and how can they improve and what prospects fit them better than their AFC rivals. So it's always good to have guys like yourself on the show.
Yeah, that should be good.
So obviously first thing first, obviously you just want to get your opinion on the Bills off season so far and obviously what you make of it from the outside looking in.
From an outsider perspective, it's been an interesting off season. I'm sure interesting might not be the word you guys would use.
Eventful.
Yeah, that's a diplomatic way of putting it. I think they're one of those teams with a quarterback like Josh Allen, you're always in a Super Bowl window, right? I think there's only a few teams that I think you'd really say that about. I think the Bills are one, but it definitely feels like a transitional year. And I think it's going to be one of those where this could be the kind of draft where they find a few guys who kind of kick in and contribute right away, or it might be more of a setting things up for 2025. So feels like it could go in a lot of directions, which is interesting. Again, from an outsider's perspective, that might be more nerve-wracking from your guys' view.
Yeah, I think, and we have, I think we've got into, I think there's been a few arguments or a few heated discussions about how the Bills will play round one. Obviously, most people
say full and frank exchange of views, I think, is the diplomatic way of putting it. Yes, we've basically got it down to three. Should we ask Jack the golden question before we
go on? Then,
Basically, you've got me, which is trade up to get the melon farmer to get the absolute knockout wide receiver one, do whatever you have to, someone. It'll actually really make a difference and will be your guy for the 5 years, hopefully more. You've got maybe go up half a dozen places for your slightly less than the top three, your Thomas or your Mitchell, stay put or trade back. And there's various people in various camps making various sort of what they should do. Obviously what they will do is completely different, too many factors. What would yours be?
It's a tricky one. I don't know if they feel like a team that's like one piece away right now for me. You never know how the board's going to fall though, right? Because if you see a guy dropping, you're like, right, okay, we're willing to move up. And Brandon Bean's the kind of GM who's not afraid to do that. I'd probably be more inclined to stay put, see how the board falls. But like I say, you never know. Draft night always throws a few curveballs, doesn't it?
So, No, that's good. I mean, let's say everyone's different. I mean, to be honest, there's part of me that actually has said in the past that I've said would move up. I just don't feel the value. Well, obviously the value would be there to go into the top 10 for either Dunze or Neighbors, but giving up a first round next year where you could potentially, especially if we're in a soft reset and it happened to miss the playoffs and be that middle range of next year's draft, that we could lose out on a decent pick there. But I think if we do anything, we'd be up to probably like Colts or Jacksonville area if we trade up. But I mean, it just depends on, as you say, how the board falls. And obviously, this is where we're going to talk defense, because we've known in the past few years that Brandon Bean on his first round picks usually, well, 9 times out of 10, actually goes for a defensive line pick. Yeah. And I just want to get your overall views on this defensive line, both edge and tackle, and if it's as deep as people see, or if there are like drop offs at any point.
Yeah, I think with the edge group, I think the most noticeable thing on that is there's no, or certainly from my perspective, there's no kind of true blue chip guy at the top of that edge group. So if we're thinking back to recent years, your Will Andersons, your Chase Youngs when he was coming out, that I'm not seeing a guy like that. I think there's, for me at least, there's a tier of three at the top with Latu, Dallas Turner and Jared Verse. I think there's then a drop off. But I think they're all kind of first round conversation type guys. And I wouldn't be surprised if one is in play into the 20s. It may be a case of trading up from there. I think the guys beyond those three, there's some good pieces, but they're either more developmental options or they've got kind of more holes in their game.
Yeah.
As for defensive tackle, I think you've got two guys at the top in Byron Murphy from Texas and Johnny Newton from Illinois, who are the cream of the crop. Again, I wouldn't call them blue chips in the sense of I'd be running the card in inside the top 10, but they'd both be first rounders for me. I think that after that, there's some nice pieces there that certainly on day two could be interesting. But I don't think there's necessarily tons of depth there like there may be other positions in this draft.
I mean, if for example, we say the Bills do trade up, say that the top four wide receivers have gone, they do trade up to, I don't know, say the Jacksonville pick, which is around 17, 18, and there is at least two of the edges on there, which edge rusher would you see that fits the Bills more, like Latu, Verse or Turner?
I guess it depends what kind of thing they want to go for, because they've again, this is from an outside perspective, the way I see it is they like to mix and match different types of rushers. There has always been that kind of the big power guys, right? Like whether it's Basham, Rousseau. Turner is more in the, saying the Von Miller mold is putting like a load of hype on it. Like he's not like he's the speedy bendy guy. Versus your more kind of pure power, speed to power type rusher. So I guess it just depends if they want to. I can see both of them fitting.
Yeah,
it's whether they're wanting to kind of pair another power edge with Rousseau, which if you are, you go inverse. If you want a speedier, twitchier, bendy guy, so you've got the two skill sets, then I think Turner would be the one for me. I really like Latu, but I don't know if he's necessarily... I don't think he's the athlete that those other two are. And that might mean he's less of a fit based on the kind of way the Bills have approached that position in the past.
He's more... Yeah, I'm hearing that obviously he's, I don't know if his stock will drop or not, but obviously he's got medical concerns with that neck.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
So that drops him.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that works, because the thing is, like, as is always the case with the draft, you only need one team to fall in love with you to take you high. You know, when Jalen Phillips came out of UCLA, no, he was at UCLA, then he went to
Miami.
When he came out, he'd obviously had a medical retirement when he was at UCLA. And then Latu, obviously coming out of UCLA, has been medically retired before. Now, Jalen Phillips went fairly high. It's not inconceivable that Latu can, but it's you could easily see him falling on draft night for that reason.
Yeah. I mean, I say it is deep. I mean, obviously names that have previously been mentioned to the Bills, at least earlier on in the draft process. We've got like Chop Robinson out of Penn, obviously Darius Robinson. He seemed to have tailed off quite a bit. In the case of Robinson, I guess he fits somewhat what the Bills like, because the Bills like to be more versatile in that defensive four. They like to rotate and obviously like that bit of versatility, because they obviously at times brought Russo out from the edge in, used to have played Basham from edge in and all that. Obviously with those two, could they potentially, is there any concerns with them, or is it just a case that they may not fit?
I think both of them Robinsons. I think Darius Robinson would fit. I think the question with him is where he is best, and if he is a bit of that kind of tweener type that we've seen come out. I don't see him as the kind of guy who can consistently win outside shoulder of a tackle, which, if you're talking about an edge, it's quite difficult to win purely on power. But he can be kicked inside if you've got that ability to kind of mess with your fronts, and that would work. Chop, I think Chop is a good player. He's like the opposite in that he's, rather than being the big kind of hulking guy you can kick in, he is a pure pass rusher. My worry with him is he's just not there as a run defender, which I know people say, oh, run game's less important, and you know, it is, but it is still an important part of the game. You can't just be a designated pass rusher if you're going to be taken in the top kind of 50 picks, which is what's being talked about for Chop. And I don't think he's been a productive enough pass rusher in college to warrant overlooking that and taking him in the range that the Bills are picking.
So as I say, so I'm just obviously I'm looking through all the 30s. Obviously, there's still some 30 visits the Bills have had that they haven't mentioned yet. I was listening to Brandon Bean's press conference earlier, and he's obviously said that they've used up the full 30 on there. I mean, looking at the names that they brought in, to look at obviously Latu, they brought in Mason Smith, which I think would be more of a day three pick. They brought in Christian Boyd, Marshall Nealand, and another one, Clemson's Rook. I'm gonna probably butcher his surname. Orahoho.
I always remember you sound like Scooby Doo if you say it, because it's Aurororo.
Okay.
Which, when I was told that, I was like, someone's having me on here. Like, they're just running. But yeah.
I mean, obviously, let's go with Root to start with. I mean, obviously, he's listed. He's listed what, 6'4", 294. Is he more of your like Ed Oliver, or can he do a bit of the run stuffing as well? Will we see him more as a three or a one? Because looking at it at the moment, we've got Phillips and Johnson as our one techs, and not really anyone behind Ed Oliver at the moment on three techs.
Yeah, I think so. He's an interesting one. So he was born in Nigeria, took up football fairly late. I think he was only started playing football when he was junior in high school. So he's still quite raw as a player. Despite the fact that he's coming out as a grad, you know, he's graduated from Clemson. I think he's a fifth year player. May even be a sixth year senior, but he's certainly a senior. He's more of the three tech type, kind of explosive off the ball, kind of gap shooting type of guy. So if you're wanting that, the guy who can back up Ed Oliver, you know, whether you want to be kind of limiting his snaps, keeping him fresh, then I think he could do that. Like I said, he needs a bit of development, so he's not a guy I'd want to be putting on the field kind of every down. But then that's why he's not being talked around in that kind of top 50 range, right? If you're confident you've got a good defensive line coach that can teach this guy up, then I think he could be a really interesting pick that could potentially outplay his value, outplay his draft pick.
Yeah, I think obviously Sean McDermott loves to rotate, and that and obviously we see him carry 9 or 10 defensive line men on there. So, I mean, is there any, obviously, if we look at the other defensive tackles are coming in, I think both Smith and Boyd, if I'm right in thinking, would more than likely be your one techs potentially. Any with a kick to a three for versatility?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think Smith's an interesting one, right? Because he obviously was a 5-star recruit. If you'd ask people this time last year to do a mock draft for 2024, he'd have been first round, maybe even kind of top half the first round. I think it's interesting to see where he'll fit. Like, he's got the power where I think I'd be comfortable playing him kind of anywhere really along that interior. He's a big guy. He's like 6'6", I think, 6'5", 6'6". Long-armed, good athlete, the kind of guy I feel could do a bit of everything. My worry there is he's kind of not really looked like the same guy since coming back from the knee injury, which he suffered on the first, I think it was the first play or one of the first plays of the 2022 season. So it's...
ACL, yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I know all about that.
it's not a small injury, right? So it's not like, it's maybe not surprising that he's not been back to his best. So he's another one that I think could be an intriguing day three pick, because there's a reason he was considered a first round pick, a first round prospect last year. There's a reason he was a 5-star recruit. He was a freshman All-American at LSU, so he's got the talent. It's just whether he can kind of get those injury woes behind him and get back to where he was. But I think he could do a bit of everything.
Yeah.
I think he'll be a name to watch on day three, kind of top half of day three for me.
Yeah, and Christian Boyd, he reminds, the way he's risen up and you see some of his athleticism, like, I can't remember the other small school guy, I think it was, was it last year or the year before, defensive tackle that actually came up, that came through the ranks, or came up the boards. I can't remember his name. That's going to bug me now. It's going to bug me for the rest of the show. No, it's gone. But obviously with him, I assume he's going to be more of your mold, your developmental molding type guy. But he's got the power to play with the odd burst of pass.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's like a lot of these Northern Iowa guys, you know, come out with. I mean, the Bills have had some success with this, right? With kind of good athletes coming from a small school, training them up. Again, that jump in competition is obviously going to be a significant one. But he's not a guy I've watched a ton of, but what I have seen, I like. The question is always, as it is with an FCS prospect, can they make that leap? Because you're taking two big jumps, really. You know, it's not coming from an SEC school.
Yeah. Or,
you know, the difference between playing FCS football and NFL football is a massive one to, you know, in the span of a year to go from that.
Yeah. So is there any, other than what we've named, is there any other, we'll go defensive tackles, whether it be one tech, three tech, five tech, or anything like that, that we have that's not talked about as much in the draft as a whole, or one that would be a really good fit for the Bills? Doesn't matter what round. It could be seventh round, could be second round, could be third if we actually get a third round pick somehow.
It depends on what you're after, right? Because if it is that, I think it's a draft class that feels quite short on the one techs, the true nose tackles, The most obvious one, if you're after a nose tackle, is Tavondre Sweat from Texas. I mean, he's a massive guy. The question mark there is going to be the character concerns, which have, I think, always been there, and his ability to manage his weight. But if you're wanting, again, with Daquan Jones kind of getting up there in age, and I think he's a free agent, 2026, I think it is. You may be wanting a long-term succession plan. The guy I do like is Chris Jenkins from Michigan. Now, I mean, you know, that's, he's not a sleeper. He's probably going to be a kind of second round pick. But I think where he fits nicely is he'd pair well with Ed Oliver as a long-term pick, because he's already a fantastic run defending tackle. Maybe the best in the class, like from day one. He's the guy you could put out there, trust him on early downs. He's not really refined as a pass rusher yet. Now, he's a good athlete, so I think the potential for him to grow into a role there, you know,
is there.
So I think at the very least, what you're getting with a player like that is a very high floor, good run defending interior player, which could develop into a true three down difference maker if he's coached upright. So I think depends how much you want to swing for the fences or whether you want to play it safe. But if you're kind of more inclined to play it safe, then I think Chris Jenkins would be a great fit.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Brandon Frisk, I don't think he's a secret anymore, is he?
No. He's been getting, that combine just like blew up.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, let's say that there's quite a lot. I mean, obviously, there's names that we haven't mentioned. I mean, you've got, like, Michael Hall Jr., you've got Leonard Taylor, Tyler Davis. One name I've been searching through, I've been going through Dane Brugler's Beast Guide and all that. One that's really caught my eye, I think it's been mentioned before on there, is another LSU defensive tackle, Jordan Jefferson. And the one thing that actually caught my eye, what was the scan report on there, was that he was a high school wrestler. And we know Sean McDermott loves his wrestling and loves guys that actually can actually wrestle as a prospect. So where's his fit for the, if he was drafted as a Bill?
I think he's in terms of where he'd fit, I think he's more of a kind of depth piece. I don't see the ceiling that some of those other guys you mentioned, like a Michael Hall. But I think that wrestling background is often talked around draft time, and I think it's for a very good reason. The amount of guys you see both on the offensive and the defensive line who've got that background, like Tyler Linderbaum, for example, when he came out of Iowa, he was a wrestling champ. Tristan Wirfs was a wrestling champ. There's a number of guys in this class who've got that background. And it just, I think where it's really valuable is it gives you that leverage ability in the trenches. And
yeah.
Get under guys' pads, but also that advanced kind of hand usage, understanding counters, all that sort of stuff. I think it's an important part of the, part of the trench play, really.
Yeah, so really, as much, okay, to some teams and some scouts, it may not seem important, but if a defensive tackle or an offensive lineman, which we'll go on to in a bit, actually has that wrestling experience and all that, would that, I wouldn't say move them up as much, but would it give them, if you had like a tiebreaker between two, we'll say Jordan Jefferson and let's just say, I don't know, I'm going to try to forget the name, Keith Randolph out of Illinois. If those two were pegged on the Bills' second, fourth round pick, would the fact that a wrestling background as such for Jefferson. Yeah. play into his favor. Would they look at that as a background to the position and actually give them a heads up on other prospects?
I think certainly for some teams, I think it's becoming, I think it's a sign of the way the NFL is changing, and not to go too far kind of down the rabbit hole, but I think there was a time when I think NFL teams would look at prospects and they wanted them to focus on football and only football. And that was the way that it was seen as, you know, you'll become a good football player by being a good football player. And I think now there's this acceptance of multi-sport athletes playing those different sports gives you those different experiences. There's different lessons from it that translate, and whether that's baseball, whether it's basketball, whether it's wrestling. And I think there's an increasing number of teams that recognize that each of those sports gives you different things.
Yeah.
And I think that's getting more important. You know, we've seen it with quarterbacks with all those off-platform throws, right? Like a lot of that's like the baseball element there. I think it's the same with the trenches and wrestling. And I think there will be some teams who are probably the old school approach of no, if he's, yeah, you know, I'm just looking for you on the football field. But I think it's increasingly a discussion point.
Yeah. So let's talk to Edge. I mean, obviously at the moment our Edge guys are Von Miller, Greg Rousseau and Kingsley Jonathan. No doubt that probably in June or July, August, we'll sign Shaq Lawson to another one year deal. Well, seems like that's inevitable down the line on there. I mean, we're looking for like a long-term replacement, someone that pairs great with what Rousseau can do. Who would that be that guy? I've been trying to figure out guys myself who could fit that mold. And then obviously the names I've got, obviously Nealand, that's actually coming for a visit. Brandon Dorlus of Oregon. They're the couple I've got so far. Yeah. What type of players could complement a Greg Rousseau?
Yeah, I think both of those would be interesting. They're obviously much more in that role of the bigger power guys. But Nealand's a guy I really like. I have a sneaking suspicion he'll go a lot higher than people think. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being that guy who sneaks into the first round. I'm not saying it'll happen, but every year we see a guy who jumps up and like half the people watching the draft go, who? Yeah. Like when Peyton Turner went to the Saints and loads of people like, what? Really? First round? Nealand is like, he's over 270 pounds, but he's like seriously quick. So I think he was clocked at like, it was either 20 miles an hour or close to 20 miles an hour during the Senior Bowl practices, which you shouldn't move like that if you're that big.
Yeah.
I think he was a high school 400 meter champion as well. So he's a very good athlete. Now, again, like a lot of these guys, he's able to win with power. That is his game. He's not necessarily a ton more nuanced than that at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think he'd be a nice fit if you wanted to just have two power rushers. Because I guess with Ed Oliver in the middle, you can have that situation where you have the two power edges on the side and then let Oliver work kind of with the more quick twitch stuff in the interior.
Yeah.
Dorlus is a similar thing. I've seen some people talking about Dorlus kicking inside a bit more in that kind of Darius Robinson thing of,
yeah,
probably a kind of setting the edge on early downs and then kicking inside on later downs. Which, again, if we're going back to that point around moving your fronts around, changing things up, I think that could be a really nice fit as well. In terms of other guys, I guess if we were kind of shifting the approach and going for more of a speed guy, that more Von Miller type, one of the guys I really like is Javon Solomon from Troy. So he's not really getting a ton of buzz. He's probably third or fourth round, maybe even a little bit later. He's really bendy, really quick. You want him kind of playing from that wide nine. He'll beat tackles around the outside. As the kind of opposite to the yin to Marshall Nealand's yang, he doesn't really kind of have that pure power to overwhelm guys as much. But I mean, his pass rush win rate was around 17% in each of his last three seasons, which from a college level is very good. Now, yes, he's playing for Troy, so he's not going up against the high-end competition week to week. But there's a lot there. He's a real kind of tough player. And I think if you're looking for that speed, then you can get that. I mean, you can double dip, right? You can get that power rusher guy early and the speed guy later, or you get the speed guy earlier and the power rush guy later. Just give you a few more weapons.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, a name, obviously, we've talked in our previous episodes about lineage, especially with Brendan Rice, of USC, with Jerry Rice's son. Obviously, there's another guy on the defensive line, Jonah Ellis.
Yeah,
of Utah. He's more of a speed rusher, isn't he? Than he is a power.
Yeah, he is. He's got three older brothers that are currently playing in the NFL, and his dad played in the NFL. So I feel like he was destined to end up there, right? You can't be the one guy in the family who doesn't. But yeah, he's a good technician. I think he understands how to kind of work different moves. But yeah, I wouldn't want him kind of being a true edge setter.
Yeah.
Early downs as much. He's not very tall. I think he's 6'2", I think. Not very long. He's under 250 in terms of weight as well, so there's that element to it. He's a little smaller, but he's quick, good first step, and you know, high floor guy, I'd say, in terms of the fact that he's a good technician. You don't often see those guys who are good technicians at the college level fail. I think where we often get things wrong with evaluations of these pass rushers in college is we look at the guys like the Trayvon Walkers, right, who are just bigger and stronger than everyone. But the guys who generally hit are the ones who know what they're doing from a hand usage perspective.
And just one other, and then I'll just ask for like a day three pick that you like that no one's talking about. But just one last evaluation. I know he's another small school guy, which out of Houston Christian. Jalex Hunt, he's more of the intrigued one on that. I mean, obviously he's speed, but I guess he's decent against the run, but just doesn't have the arsenal.
So he's an odd one. So unsurprisingly, it's tricky to get hold of their tape. I think he's a converted safety.
So I'll
obviously admit he's not a guy I've watched a ton of, because at that level it's difficult to get the film, but he's an intriguing developmental guy, right? It's not you hear of guys who go from linebacker to edge, or maybe DT to edge. I can't remember the last time I heard of a safety coming down and playing the box. So I think that's an interesting one.
And then say, so is there any prospect that's not talked about that you really like?
I mean, Javon Solomon is my guy out of those. But if I was picking another, I do think Austin Booker from Kansas is an interesting player. He's kind of long, quick, bendy guy, got a good set of moves. His testing wasn't as impressive as I think he looks on tape,
but when
that happens, I'm always inclined to trust the tape rather than the testing, because some guys just don't test well. So he'll be an interest. I don't know where he's going to end up, because he was like, some guys had him really high pre-combine in their mocks. I think he was even mocked in the first round for some, and then now he seems to have just dropped off the face of the earth. So he's probably a day three guy. So he'd be one I'd mention.
Yeah. And Robin, I know you want to talk offensive line. I know you had a question.
And a question about defense. I had a question. I know it's not strictly speaking trenches, but I did have a question about just linebackers, because I'm sort of going, so if I go for, on the one hand, we go all the way up to number nine, trade everything to get our big wide receiver. That doesn't happen. It could easily happen because the three big ones could be gone by eight or nine and then forget about it. And then you're on to plan B. Let's say the pick 60. Have you got anyone? Because the reason I'm asking is we've got two excellent linebackers at the moment, and one we got last year who could have a very good year too, with a bit of polish. But Matt Milano, I think he's going to be 30 this year, and I'm just thinking they kind of quite like to get a guy, maybe second round, maybe even fourth round linebacker. If you've got a couple of names, you just might want to throw out, because I wouldn't be completely falling off my chair surprised if they got another linebacker.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see where they go, right? Because this linebacker class seems like a really difficult one to kind of get a feel for where the NFL is on them. At 60, maybe I think the two guys that I like would probably be gone by them, which are Peyton Wilson from NC State and Junior Colson from Michigan. Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M might be on the board. I think he could be an interesting one. But I think if you're at 60, I'd be inclined to kind of wait until day three and see what's available there. The guy I really like who may be gone by the fourth is Tommy Eichenberg from Ohio State. He is brother of Dolphins offensive lineman Liam Eichenberg. Really, really smart player. Like there's going to be some athletic limitations with him. But I think too often with linebackers, I think we focus on those hyper athletes when actually the best guys in the league, yes, they're good athletes, but first and foremost, they read the game well. And Eichenberg is a guy who does that. So I think he'd be a nice piece, given that you've already got a lot of talent there, that you can kind of bring along and develop.
I mean, when we go offense, I mean, obviously last year the Bills offensive line was the healthiest, probably one of the healthiest in the league. I don't think really anyone missed any time on there. Obviously we've lost Mitch Morse in the off season, obviously moved Connor McGovern in, and actually got Dave Edwards in as starting left guard at the moment. Knowing the way the Bills play, Do you see it? I see like center could be as a sneaky need, because obviously McGovern hasn't played that much center. Do you see that as a sneaky need, but obviously could be found in day three, a starter, whether it be center or guard?
Yeah, I think it's one of those where like you look at that interior line and they're not spending much at any spot there, right? And I know Cyrus Torrence is obviously, they're not spending a lot on him because he's a rookie. Well, not on a rookie deal. But I think, center's an interesting one. I don't think it's the kind of position that you want to be spending a premium pick on. But there's a couple of guys that could be interesting in the later rounds. I think also, like, you know, whether you maybe then look at guard as well. Even if it's not to play immediately, there's a handful of guys that I think could be worthwhile. And as is often the case with interior offensive line, you can wait a little while and still get kind of decent players who can make an impact in the NFL.
Is there any, because I know obviously one of our success stories on the O-line back in the noughties obviously was Andy Levitre and obviously Eric Wood both came in. And obviously, Eric Wood had that guard to center flex on there. Is there anyone in this draft that can come in, contribute at, say, for example, if we're saying now we're going to say left guard, because I think Torrence has got the right guard manned up, that can come in at left guard, play a season whilst they just see what they got out of McGovern, and then, if needs be, kick the inside to center?
That's a good question. I think a lot of the guards I like are probably true guards. The one guy, if I was thinking kind of later rounds, would be Bo Limmer from Arkansas. Now, he played guard until 2023, and then he switched to center. I think he might have even played some tackle very, very early on in his Arkansas career. But he's got good tape at guard and at center. Now, he's not the longest guy, so I think the concern with putting him at guard would be, can he hold up there in the NFL? Whereas center, you can typically hide that length a little bit better. But he'd be an interesting one to watch. I think Cooper Beebe from Kansas State is a similar kind of thing. Again, length concerns. I've said before, he's built a bit like SpongeBob SquarePants. but he's got the kind of the intelligence and the power to add value at both spots.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look. I'm just obviously looking through. I mean, obviously, as I say, majority of them, you, as you say, you can get quite low. I don't know if there's any real prospects that really stand out. I mean, obviously, Tanner Bortolini had a pretty good combine. Obviously, jumped up quite a bit on there. I mean, is there anyone really that's going under the radar? Obviously, we know that 4th-7 is probably where we're going to get, where we're going to dip in if we do dip into the offensive line, both guard and center. Is there any under the radar guys that could come in, be that developmental piece for a year, and then jump into a starting role?
I think one guy that I think is interesting is Kingsley Aguakun from Florida. Now, the Bills might go, okay, we dipped into the Florida offensive line well last year. Let's do it again. Now, he's kind of a pure center. He's not the biggest and he's not the strongest, but he's a very natural athlete. And I think the Bills do like to mix up the kind of zone and gap scheme runs. They were more of a zone team under Joe Brady towards the end of the season. I think he fits well with that type of offense. He's a good pass protector. He definitely needs to develop. If we're talking developmental guys, he needs to kind of get a little bigger and get more sand in his pants to stand up against NFL kind of power. But if you're talking like late day three guys, he'd probably be one of the guys I'd have on my list. I think Limmer, who I mentioned before, is probably also going to go somewhere on day three as well. He's an interesting one.
And the best, LC, as you say, the Bills love the zone and the gap. I mean, obviously, I know it's part of Aaron Cromer's staple. They like to do the pin and pull run. Another question: is there any guy in there that fits that mold well? Because I know he'd like to do it all over the board. I know Torrance did it quite well. Morse was good at it. Again, anyone that sort of mold?
I think, and this is probably a little bit higher up the board, would be Christian Haynes from UConn. He's one of those guys in this class who combines that explosive athleticism, which you need if you're running those kind of outside runs, the pin pull stuff, with real power and strong hands to kind of seal the edge. He's also super, super experienced. He's got like over 3,000 career snaps to his name. I have him ranked fairly highly. I'll be interested to see where he'll go. If we're talking like where the Bills are picking, he'd probably be in play in that second round range. So I guess it just comes down to how much you value the interior offensive line and whether you want to be spending day two pick at the moment on that.
Yeah. Robin, you got anything you want to?
Yeah, I do. I just got a question about tackle. So, as Matt was saying before, we were really, I think, a touch fortunate just with how healthy the offensive line was this season. As I was talking, Torrance didn't even miss a snap. Spencer Brown had a really good year. So there's an interesting question about do you maybe extend Spencer Brown at right tackle now because you've already extended Deion Dawkins? So do you lock that in? If you wait another year and then extend him, you could be adding $3-5 million to the salary. So just to sort of cover them, I suppose two-parter, is swing tackle still a thing? Do they still have that? And is there anyone, and I'm thinking day three, as a possible backup? Because if anything happens to the top five of the offensive line, we've got Alec Anderson, who looked pretty good. He made the 53. And after him, there's two guys I couldn't even tell you anything about.
Vandermark.
There's Vandermark, and there's two other guys that I'm just not even sure about. So I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if, you know, rounds 5, 6, 7, they look for someone. Any sort of swing tackle or maybe even long-term left or right tackle day three?
I think it's one of those things with this tackle class where it feels like it's super, super heavy at the top. Like we've seen like 8 guys getting first round hype, depending on whether you're talking of some of them as tackles or guards. My worry with it this year is I don't think the quality extends much beyond that top end. The one guy that I really, really like, though, who is probably going to go somewhere probably the third round-ish, so not quite that late, but is Kieran Amagogi from Yale. Now, he's played tackle, but he also has got experience at guard. He's probably a tackle in the NFL. I mean, he's got 36.5-inch arms or something massive. So he's a very good athlete. But if you want a guy who you can kind of bring on board as a developmental guy, who can then be that backup who can fit in at left and right tackle and at a pinch on the interior, then I think he'd be a really nice one with, I think, the potential to be a potential starting tackle at the NFL level if he's developed correctly.
And then one last one, because we've probably thrown so many different names at you and all that, and I hope obviously it's actually good to hear of the other people actually express different players and their opinions on names that the Bills are not usually linked to or have been mocked to when you see guys do these 4, 5 and even now 7 round mock drafts is Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State.
Yeah.
Is he more tackle? Is he right or left? Or is he one that can be a swing, or is there a potential to potentially slide him inside?
I think he's best inside. I think he's such a weird player to evaluate because I talked earlier about the kind of difference between testing and tape. He obviously tested like incredibly well. He was super explosive. The agility stuff was pretty good. I don't know if I necessarily saw that on tape consistently.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably not necessarily got the quickness to play on an island as a tackle. But I think you could plug him in at guard and be very happy. He's got proper power at the point of attack to kind of displace defenders. So I think in the NFL, he's probably an interior lineman.
The guard that if for example, if your two tackles go down, you're inclined to put him on there because he'll at least have the experience, but more or less going to be an inside guy. Going through his NFL career.
Yeah, I think you know most of his time was spent at guard in college, and you know again if that's at the FCS level, and I think sometimes the teams are telling you something with that. He's got the length, like he's got nearly 34-inch arms, so it's not that he's not got the kind of tackle build. It's just, do you really trust him to kind of mirror those NFL edge rushers, doing it against NFL competition versus FCS competition? Again, it's that difference.
And I say, I've always said in our episodes, and this reinforces it, that the games are won in the trenches, and there's there's a lot of good talent in their own unique ways in this draft. And I really like thank you for coming on the show, talking this and giving us your opinions. Just gonna give you one last question. Just any guy, I'm talking any position now. I just want one guy, it could be offense or defense, that you well and truly love, that's going to be a day two, day three guy, and obviously where people can find your work.
Oh, that is a really tricky. It's like picking between your favorite children. I will go with the Marshall running back, Rasheen Ali. So he's not been getting a lot of attention because he suffered an injury at the Senior Bowl, which has meant he's missed a lot of the pre-draft process. And has had injuries in college. This guy is a track star, competed on Marshall's track team, had some absolutely bonkers college production when he was healthy. Good NFL size, good quickness, good vision. He's a good pass catcher. If he can stay healthy, and there's a real asterisk there, but if this guy can stay healthy, I think he could be one of those day three guys who ends up being a very productive NFL back.
Like I say, a Pacheco type guy.
Yeah, I'd love to see him. I'm a Packers fan, and I would absolutely love to see him on the Packers. But the picks I want to happen, I'm sure this is the same with you guys, the picks I want to happen never actually happen. So I'm trying
Well, it seemed like that last year when the Kyra Lamb bit that.
Oh, right, I wanted. Really kind of wishing it hadn't. Although, you see the workout picture of him. Jury still out. Give him one more year.
But obviously, where can we find your work, Jack, and can find you on the socials?
So you can find me on Twitter or X or whatever we call it these days at Jack_Brentnell. If you want to find my work, head over to the Touchdown NFL on Twitter. We've launched our draft guide, which has got it's over 370 pages, I think. A really great team have put loads of effort in on it. It's only £3. So if anyone's kind of wanting to brush it up with a week to go till the draft, it's a great place to start. So
yeah, I did get that when it first came out. I did buy that, and it is actually a good read. So I would recommend, as say, £3, worth it to go and grab it. And I know we obviously, in the past few years, we've had your colleague Simon Carroll on the show, and I always love to, with him, actually pick out names that he probably hasn't really done that much research on and actually try and stump him. And hopefully I can actually send him one and see if he can get something out on that, because I know he's done a lot of interviews and all that.
He's done lots of interviews. Yeah.
But definitely give the Touchdown NFL crew a listen. And on behalf of Jack, Robin, and myself, Matt, it's thank you for listening. And let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.